You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
So many afternoons spent where Jeff would come in the room and we just watch fucking Steve Harvey on the
Really?
Feed. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's right. He does that now, doesn't he?
Uh-huh. He sure does.
It's not bad, actually.
2 weeks a year for an entire season.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, what?
That's what happens.
They record the entire thing in 2 weeks?
2 weeks, yeah. They record the entire season. Absolutely.
How many episodes do they do a day?
They probably do like four or five a day.
But even if four or five a day, over 2 weeks, that's only 10 times four. Okay, I guess you can do that.
What? I mean, what
All right.
were you going
to
do?
You're right. You're right. I guess the math works out, doesn't
it? Yeah, the math absolutely works out on that. That's what happens when you're a king of comedy. You know what else happens when you're one of the original kings of comedy?
What?
You get cast in movies like Serving Sarah.
Oh my God. Yeah, you do. He is one of them, isn't he?
He sure is.
Matthew Perry is
Cedric the Entertainer.
Oh, I see where you're going.
Oh, you dumb. It's the editing bay here on the Next Wave Radio Network. My name's Joe.
My name's Joel.
And this is where we come to talk about movies. Most of the time, they're bad movies, but sometimes, just sometimes, they're movies that are like the undiscovered country. Not the Star Trek movie, but just like the figurative undiscovered country.
Although,
where it's, you know, it's a kind of an underrated thing, and you end up finding some enjoyment out of it, and there's some redeeming value. I don't know if that's what we're going to run into in this one this week.
I'm
going to
bet no.
No.
The undiscovered country, however, was an undiscovered country. A diamond in the rough, as it were.
Like Aladdin.
No, like Star Trek, the undiscovered. Oh, I see what you did.
I like this. This is almost like we're like Abbott and Costello right now.
Who's on first?
So we watched this movie Serving Sarah. It's actually been like a couple weeks since we've recorded now. You were what, out of town?
What were
you doing?
I was doing very important things in fucking Phoenix, Arizona, where it was like 104.
There is,
you know, it's a dry heat, Joe. They say it's a dry heat.
I hate that so much. I hate that so much.
It's kind of true, but still 104.
Still oppressive.
It just makes it, oh, so it only feels like 101. Well, that's great. And I'm standing out in it underneath a palm tree.
Oh, yeah.
So like one leg is in shade and the other isn't.
Do you have like some kind of weird reverse farmer stand thing going on?
Like Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yes.
Like half of my face is just like
exactly
burned to the crisp. No, luckily I was indoor for the most part. But damn, it was like that movie Sunshine, where just like any second your flesh is in, you know.
I thought you meant you were like you were running from with Rose Byrne from a naked man who was trying to kill everybody.
That's not Rose Byrne.
That was Rose Byrne.
Rose Byrne?
I'm pretty sure that was Rose Byrne.
I don't
think
that was Rose Byrne.
I'm gonna
look this up.
Was I thought it was?
You might be right.
I know Chris Evans was in it.
Hell yeah, he was.
And he got in like the coolant and stuff. Oh man.
Spoiler alert.
Still like my favorite. Spoiler alert, my ass. You don't listen to this podcast if you don't want shit spoiled.
Sunshine is like an obscure movie.
Sunshine's
though,
a great, but it's also like almost what, a decade old now at this point.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. So you know what? If you haven't seen Sunshine yet, sorry.
But you know what? I can recommend that movie.
It's only Danny Boyle's like best film.
Oh, you think so?
I love that movie. I mean, I like Slumdog Millionaire a lot.
Despite the last act?
I like, yeah,
of
even
Sunshine?
Despite the last act. I think that the movie still succeeds because that's kind of Danny Boyle's bit, is that like he creates a movie like 28 Days Later.
Yeah, yeah.
It starts off like a zombie, you know, Night of the Living Dead kind of thing, but then it turns into that whole like military compound bit. Danny Boyle is great with that.
It worked in a movie like 28 Days Later.
I think it also worked with Sunshine.
But you know what? He had such a good, like, smart sci-fi movie going. He didn't need that horror aspect.
I agree. I agree that he didn't need that horror aspect. But it was someplace that you can honestly say, like, you didn't see it going there.
No, but I didn't want it to go there.
But that's just because
it's not a compliment.
Just because you didn't want it to go there doesn't mean that there isn't some kind of artistic merit
Holy shit, that is Rose Byrne.
Thank you very much, asshole.
Rose Byrne looking the homeliest I've ever seen her in a movie.
Well,
wow. She's really grown into herself.
I'd like to grow into her,
if you know what I mean.
So this is where Joel says...
Welcome to the editing bay.
No,
not the editing bay.
This
not
is where
edit
Joel
bay.
Says to Joe...
You were not wrong.
What are you, fucking Fonzie? All right, so we're talking about Serving Sarah, a film that was, it was filmed, a lot of it filmed in the DFW area.
Represent.
Yeah.
Not in a good way.
And I happened to work on it for about a week or two.
Now, when you say behind the camera or in front of?
In front of, doing a lot of like extra work.
Okay, are you, because I was looking hard for you, although I had a DVD resolution version of this copy because, surprisingly, this wasn't released on Blu-ray.
they didn't want this in high def.
I don't even know that they shot it in high def. I don't think it was shot on film.
If it was shot on
mini DVD.
If you're watching Serving Sarah, if you fast forward it to 36 minutes and 4 seconds.
He's got the time code there.
I did. Well, because I figured it might be worth mentioning.
Yeah.
36 minutes and 4 seconds. We open up on the establishment on the inside of the hotel lobby.
Yes.
And you'll see some dude in like a red jacket come up and like start talking to somebody sitting down. That's me.
No way.
Yes.
Like a Michael Jackson leather jacket?
No.
From just Thriller?
Like I'm one of the attendants at a hotel.
Oh, you're working there.
I'm working at
like
the hotel.
A suede.
I've got the red suede jacket.
Interesting. Do we see your face or just your gorgeous body?
Kind of see my face. Oh, okay. My God. There's nothing gorgeous about it.
It's getting sexual again.
All right. So Serving Sarah is the story about a process worker. Like he serves papers, and he's kind of fearless, you know? He's the bad boy of process serving. And it's played by a guy named Joe, played by Matthew Perry.
That's right. Joe Tyler.
Mm-hmm. And
isn't that the lead singer of Aerosmith?
No, it's Steven Tyler and Joe Perry.
Oh, there you go. Combined.
Combined, you have like this weird Matthew Perry's Joe Tyler thing going on. Ah. God, that's so weird. I never thought about that.
He kind of is, though, the combination of the two of them.
Oh, God. But
30
I mean,
years younger.
In name only. Matthew Perry is in no way like the wild man.
No,
like,
he's the Jewiest person in this movie.
All right, so he plays this process server, and he hasn't been doing too well at his job.
Yeah, hard times for serving.
And so he's like, come on, dude. Cedric the Entertainer plays his boss, and he's not wanting to give him this job. He's got this big job coming up. I guess process servers have big scores.
That was one of the weird things. Like, they played this up like it was bounty hunting.
They played it up like it was Glengarry Glenn Ross.
Yeah, no kidding.
Make that sale.
Where are the leads? I need the good leads.
Yes, these right?
Yeah.
You get what Maury and Mitch want you to. I can't even go
ABC.
Into that right now.
Always be closing.
Always be processing. Always be serving.
Always be serving. ABS.
Much better than IBS.
Always.
Which is what this film kind of is. Like the product of IBS.
That's what it brought out of me.
All right. So I knew that we were in trouble watching this because I haven't seen this movie since I saw it in the theater when it came out.
Yeah. Now, did you get to see this for free because you were in it?
Yeah.
You were like 36 minutes in. I'm the guy in the red coat. Come on.
Well, I actually had like a whole other scene too where the Vinnie Pastore character.
Yeah.
God, what was his name in this movie?
Oh, shit. I don't
Tony.
Remember anybody's
it was
name.
Tony.
Oh, of course. Oh, original.
Yeah.
To have an Italian guy.
So he's being kind of led all over the place. Like, he keeps getting tricked to go, you know, to
Bangor, Maine.
To Bangor, Maine, or he's going
Miami.
To Hawaii. Miami. That's right. And so in this point, he's in Miami, even though all of that is filmed in Dallas.
I thought so.
And as he's coming into the hotel, like I play the first scene, which was really weird because if you were to go in like the sequence of how it was originally supposed to be laid out, I guess, like I open the door for him and he lets himself in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know, good afternoon, sir.
Oh,
yeah,
you have a role.
Yeah.
You have a line.
I go, good afternoon, sir. And he's like, yeah. And he goes in. And then we cut to the establishment where I'm already inside or whatever.
Yeah, they didn't want to pay you. They didn't want to upscale you.
So then he has all that shit happen. He finds out that she's not, Sarah Moore is not staying at that hotel. And he exits, and I open the door for him again. I'm like, have a great day, sir. And he goes, go fuck yourself.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah. Cutting room floor.
So
the story of your life, Joe.
It is. It really is.
The name of your memoirs.
It's Cutting Room Floor. he's being led astray. He's trying to swipe this this bounty, this serving the papers, out from under Matthew Perry. I feel like we're like kind of already skipping so much.
We are. We haven't even introduced like the Elizabeth Hurley character.
Yeah.
You want to sum up the plot real quick, or I can?
Yeah, please.
Sure.
Please. So because like, all I know is like I fucking worked on the thing. I was one of the guys that was excited to see it when I saw it in the theater.
Yeah.
And even now, after seeing it the second time on DVD, like, I still really have a hard time following why. Like,
oh, yeah.
Not so much the what, but the why things happen
in
this movie.
No, there's no reason for this. Although, you know, okay, so Matthew Perry and Vincent Pastore, who you'll know from, Sopranos?
Big Pussy in The Sopranos.
Big Pussy. Anytime you need, like a overweight, like, Italian mobster-looking guy, this is the guy you get. So Cedric the Entertainer is their boss, and Matthew Perry's been fucking up, which we find out later. Vincent Pastore, Tony has been sabotaging
him. Been sabotaging
him. Hey, listen, all y'all. It's a sabotage. And so Cedric the Entertainer is doing a facepalm right now. He sends Matthew Perry on this big, you know, what is it, like $5,000? You got to serve papers to this rich guy's wife. The rich guy played by
Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell doing like a cowboy Texan sort of
What was really I liked this sequence, the fact that he's like dropping Sarah off, his wife, dropping her off at the airport,
a DFW airport,
to go to
Terminal
to go home,
C, by the way,
to New York, and then like just kind of scoots up like two gates and picks up Amy Adams,
yes,
who plays his mistress.
By the way, Amy Adams looking, I don't remember her. It's like her and Rose Byrne like somehow crossed paths. Like Rose Byrne got
that Amy Adams started off got really hotter hot and like has now become homely.
But like she's playing the role of a hot blonde. Amy Adams is in this movie.
Yeah,
with like a thick Southern accent. She shows up. She's got this little belly shirt on.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh my god! And now, like, who would cast her in that role nowadays? Not necessarily because she's old. She just kind of gets cast as the girl next door. She's a great actress. Don't get me wrong. But like,
I'm not the biggest fan.
I know, we had this conversation before.
No.
And not even of her acting skills, right?
No.
Like, I get it if you don't like the look. But
yeah, no. Not even
Oscar
her acting
award
skills.
Winning, man.
I really don't think she's that good.
Wow.
I kind of feel like.
I love her in everything.
I feel like people have fallen under like the spell of like, ooh, she's an ingenue. She's like some new blood, so let's pay some more attention to her. Whereas I feel like Jennifer Lawrence, really cute.
Yeah.
But also has like just an amazing acting talent.
See, and I put those two in kind of the same category.
Yeah.
Although I love Jennifer Lawrence a little bit more.
A little more love for J-Lo.
A little bit. Because I get the feeling like she's fun off camera. Like you've seen her in interviews and, you know, backstage. And she's always doing like.
Stop it, Jeff.
Jeff Earnshaw is getting a chubby over here. Sorry, bud. Taken. Right? Didn't she marry? Did she get married? Maybe not.
I don't think so.
Still on the market?
No, I think she's still on the market.
Oh, there's still hope, buddy.
Yeah.
Wow, I started off summarizing
the
plot, and then got sidetracked by women.
So we
story
find out that
life.
Sarah's supposed to be served papers.
Yes,
and
hence the title.
Yes, and what we find out is that Matthew Perry character finally tracks her down, serves her the papers.
Mm-hmm.
And she finds out like they're papers for divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband Bruce
Campbell
wants to divorce her, and if she gets divorced under Texas law,
yeah.
She'll lose everything. Like she won't get stuff, and which I don't think is completely accurate.
I don't know, but it seems plausible.
It seems plausible, but so then
because that's how Texas do.
So Matthew Perry's been roughed up by some dudes,
yeah.
And he loses his car, so he's having to take a bus back. And Sarah ends up getting on that same bus, and she concocts a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if you help me serve my husband papers, if you tear up what you just did and serve my husband papers first. I'll split whatever I get with him.
Yeah, because
from
it'll,
the settlement.
Because technically she'd be in New York, and
yeah, and it's a little more liberal
the
there.
Laws, mm-hmm, are in her favor,
and so that's kind of the whole plot of this movie.
That's exactly the plot.
Is that you know it's all about trying now to serve Bruce Campbell, and then word gets out that they're trying to get him. So it kind of becomes a little bit of cat and mouse.
I was just gonna say that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've used that term like three or four times when we were talking about the movie we did for Afternoon Delight. So
oh, really?
It's right at the tip of my tongue.
Unagi. I'm just saying, your mind to my mind with this
yes.
little Vulcan mind meld there.
My God. You need
second
just,
Star Trek reference.
Little fucking sexual games.
We're going for three.
All right. So
get
I
the
knew
trifecta.
I knew we were in trouble when I started watching this movie again. And it had like the whole animated like opening credits thing.
Okay. I'm glad you said that too. Yeah, so it's like a little typography, but the letters are dancing around and the S in serving Sarah is chasing all of the other
letters. All the other letters. And in fact, I do believe at one point they've rearranged all the letters.
Yes.
And on the screen was the word
vagina. Thank you. So I was like, is that intentional?
I have no idea, but I was
or
like,
is my mind unscrambling it because
nope.
I've got
no. Because I freeze framed it and I was like, yep, that, it says vagina.
Is that
going right
to be the cover photo on our Facebook page next week?
Yes.
Hell yes.
Yes, it will.
Everybody
be.
Go to your editing bay on Facebook just to see vaginas.
It totally, yeah,
wait,
it totally
that came
says
out wrong.
Vaginas. Now, can you think of a less charismatic actor to anchor this movie than Matthew Perry?
You know what? I'm not going to necessarily put all of the blame on him because he can be good. I like him.
You've seen him in like the whole Nine Yards. He did that
yeah.
Bruce Willis movie.
You're right. He's great when he's playing like neurotic and trying. He's great when he's playing Chandler. He's Chandler forever.
Yes, exactly. But he's no good when he's supposed to be the cocky, confident.
No,
you
like,
know, wise
he's kind of a bad boy.
He's not like he can't. I couldn't tell if they were trying to make him Ace Ventura or if they were trying to make him like Paul Rudd. Or
yeah.
If they, I couldn't tell who he was supposed to be as a character.
Almost like De Niro in Midnight Run.
Yeah.
Like, kind of, this guy's in control, but even when he's not in control, he still feels in control.
And I don't know if that's just, you know, like you said, you know, you can put some of the blame on him, but, you know, also, I guess it goes on Reginald Hudlin, the director, who
yes.
also has a history, like, Reginald Hudlin writes a lot of comics for Marvel Comics.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, he writes the Black Panther series.
Oh,
and
shocking!
Actually, a really good comic book writer.
Well, not a very good movie director.
Not a good movie director at all.
He's done House Party. Kid and Play's House Party,
and wrote House Party. He
was that the sequel?
He wrote and directed House Party.
Yeah. That's the Pajama Jammy Jam, right?
No. That the first one.
Yeah.
He created the House Party franchise, basically.
All right.
That was his brainchild. And so I think he directed like the first two or three of those.
Wikipedia just has the first one. And also Boomerang, that movie.
Oh,
with
Eddie Murphy and
exactly.
Halle Berry.
And Tim Meadows, The Lady of the Man. He directed that one as well.
And we saw how successful that one was.
So hit or miss. I get the feeling nobody's hearts were in this movie. Certainly not the director. Certainly not Matthew Perry's. Matthew Perry. And this is the other reason I can't give him too much shit. Like, they had to suspend filming. Do you know this?
He was fighting addiction, yeah. No. And that's one of the points that I have.
He went into rehab.
He went into rehab.
Halfway through the making of this movie.
And that's why, while you're watching the movie,
yes.
At one point, like, he just gains, like, 30 pounds. In the course of the movie, you're like, wait a minute. Like, he was thin at the beginning of the movie.
Those were the drugs.
He was in pretty decent shape.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, halfway through the movie, they stay in some hotel that, like, Mike Judge works the front desk of.
Thank you. I went looking. I thought that was him. I recognized the voice.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find him anywhere on the IMDb
page. Oh, yeah. That was absolutely Mike Judge. And they set up in one of the rooms, and suddenly he has, like, two more chins.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's, like, fighting to squeeze into the costume that apparently he'd been wearing, like, the whole time. Yeah.
Gotta get the seamstress
on set.
He
suffered some bad weight gain. Also,
because I was reading about it, when he was gone, because he was gone for, like, what, 5-6 weeks?
Yeah, for a while.
Which is an eternity in, you know, most movies are filmed in...
The principal photography
is
done, like, in just a couple of months.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
For the half of it, well, he's the star of this movie, so you can't do too much without him. But what they did do is shoot around him, and there are a couple of scenes that I don't, like, I think they shot out of sequence.
Yeah.
There are scenes that are, he's talking to somebody, or him and Elizabeth Hurley are talking to somebody, and they cut away to the other person they're talking to, but you never see them in the frame at the exact same time. Like,
right. There's
not even, like, an over-the-shoulder where they try to get an extra to stand in for him. There's a couple of scenes
it's
that were,
some
like...
some awkward exchanges where, like,
right? Sight
lines are off.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Who's talking to who? What's going on?
A lot of that can be accredited to, I'm guessing, you know... present company notwithstanding, there's a lot of bad local talent in
this
movie.
Dude, yes, yeah.
Because it was all shot here in Dallas.
Get out of my head, because I think,
sorry.
I'm totally like, yeah, what is up? Like, what I think, what did I write down for the note? I can't remember what I put down, but I can't even
financial
find it right
equi plan,
but
financial
I,
services.
I was like, Jesus Christ, you know, the local Dallas talent that they put into this movie, it's all bad.
Yeah, it did not make Dallas look good. The locations look ugly. It's not shot well.
No.
Y'all, I started to send it to about
all right.
Dallas
it's
by
okay.
saying y'all.
It's thematic. It's thematic.
Listen all, y'all. It's a
sabotage. I'm going to put you in a waitress outfit and just tell you to like have people tell people
hi,
kiss
hun.
Your grits.
Yeah,
kiss
exactly.
My grits.
Want some pie? Dallas is not all the stereotypes that it's made out to be. It's some of them, but we don't all ride horses to work, you know, and wear cowboy hats.
Right.
It's like any other big city, except a little more racist. thanks, Jeff.
But we're not Fort Worth.
But no, exactly. Thank you. Yeah, we do have some self-respect, please. But yeah, this makes it look ugly, and like everybody here is an oilman with a heavy accent.
Uh-huh.
Joe, you don't have an accent. Well, you're from fucking New York. So
I'm
you
originally from
you?
New York, but I've lived here since 1991.
And even you haven't been corrupted.
No, my older sister has an accent, though.
Does she really? She developed it when she moved here?
Absolutely, and she's lived here far shorter than I have.
But was she at a younger, tender age?
No, my older
impressionable.
Sister.
Oh, your older sister.
My
okay,
older
my
sister.
Bad.
She stayed in New York to finish high school
mm-hmm.
when I moved here.
Hmm.
And she probably didn't move here until about, 96, 97.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she's...
Interesting.
She hasn't had that much time. When you think about it, you're like, wow, I can't believe that you've developed this accent.
Yeah, the dialect is it's infectious.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's going to happen.
So,
Dallas, not looking
good. Dallas doesn't look good. It's not represented well.
No.
But getting back onto Matthew Perry.
Yes.
You know, the thing is, the problem with this movie is it opens up and it's like, there's so many bad one-liners that they fit in. Like, and they don't work. Every one of them falls flat. I don't know if it's the way that's presented or just the way it's delivered. Like, there's a point where Matthew Perry gets into this elevator. He, like, sneaks down into the elevator shaft, sneaks into the elevator, and then, like, starts, like, just talking to the dude, and he's like, nice suit. You know, like, just, it's not funny.
No.
Like, the things he's saying aren't funny. They're not witty. And it almost feels like like Reginald Hudlin was like, just say whatever, just riff. Just riff off the top of your head.
Do,
be
what
funny,
would Chandler
do your
do?
Friends thing.
Yeah.
Do Friends.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you being funny like in Friends? Like, I feel like that was a conversation that went on a lot on the set of this movie.
Yeah.
Why aren't you being funny like
we
you are
hired
on that TV
you
show?
Because you're Chandler.
And he's like, I'm not a fucking improv comedian. Like, give me a script. Give me a decent script.
Yeah.
And there's not a decent script at work here. The story is so flat. You know what this movie, this should not have been a movie. Like this was a this
that's
is,
true.
This is a good premise for like a sitcom, like a mid-season kind of or off-season sitcom.
Yeah,
that would have been even
I guess,
like,
but
better.
It has such a like there's a mission to go on, and once you complete that mission, where do you take it from there? Like this isn't a I mean, if it's like a day in the lives of these process servers, and every week there's hijinks going on. Yeah, but this is kind of a once in a lifetime. Like this is the biggest thing that's ever happened to a process server.
Yeah.
Yeah, first of all, there shouldn't be a movie about this profession.
No, there
at all.
Shouldn't. It's so boring.
Yeah.
God, that you keep cutting back to like Cedric the Entertainer,
yeah.
Who's just basically was hired to sit in a room by himself.
Man,
for
that
the
motherfucker.
Most part.
He probably worked it for 2 days.
Yeah.
Did all of the scenes, most of them alone.
Uh huh.
Where he's just like yelling and punching a bag. And,
yeah.
Doing
and
his
dancing.
Little sand comb, Zen garden.
And I'll tell you, like the dude is trying to give. Like there are some actors in this movie that you could tell
mm-hmm.
are trying to give what they can.
I actually like,
and I thought Cedric was one of them.
I liked him in this actually. He's one of the few actors that I kind of LOL'd at.
Yeah, I thought Cedric was giving as much as he could.
Mm-hmm.
I thought
Bruce Campbell.
What's his name? Bruce? Not Bruce Campbell. I'm thinking about
Terry Crews.
Terry Crews.
Yeah,
I thought Terry Crews gave a lot.
President Camacho.
Yes, I think that guy is fucking amazingly.
He's
funny.
Hilarious. He's the Old Spice guy, right?
And he brings it on.
No,
he's the new Old Spice guy. Yeah, he's
he does all those. Well, not anymore. Maybe they've had a few Old
yeah,
Spice
yeah, I'm
guys
sure,
actually.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. I think he does like the Old Spice, like shaving cream or something like that. He does something like that. There's
yeah.
like something where there's a guy laying in a hospital bed, and he's like, "You gotta shave." Yeah. No, I think he's amazing.
He's hilarious.
And for me, I don't know if it's because I'm a fanboy, but I think Bruce Campbell never disappoints.
Oh, of course not. Well, especially when he's playing a role like this, where he's supposed to be like smarmy and just this cowboy hick who's cheating on his wife.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the role he was born to play.
I love how ridiculous he is, though, when he's like, he realizes that they're trying to serve him papers, mm-hmm. and Cedric the Entertainer says something about, like, you know, that conniving bitch, and Bruce Campbell's like, hey, that's my wife you're talking about there. I love it because every time he would talk, it would take me to, like, I would get flashes of Bubba Hotep.
Yes.
And, like, I'd be like, ah, and I'd start thinking of a better movie.
Also filmed here in the Dallas area, right?
Well,
Texas.
North Texas
area. Yeah.
I'll
tell you, though, of all the, as long as we're talking about actors and who was good and who was bad, the absolute worst person in this movie. Are we on the same page? You want to say on the count of three?
I don't think we're on the same page.
Oh, you think there's a worse actor than Elizabeth Hurley in this film?
I think Matthew Perry was worse than Elizabeth
Hurley.
Do
you really?
I sure do.
But at least he was strung out on drugs. The guy's got a reason.
You know what, though? I don't care. Like, at least with some of her performances, they were like there was some sincerity to it.
Yeah?
The way that she would deliver some lines, there was some sincerity to it.
Ooh.
Matthew Perry... The problem with Matthew Perry is you've seen him do better.
But this is exactly...
That's disappointing.
It is disappointing.
That's a lot more disappointing. Whereas Elizabeth Hurley, I'm used to her just being a pretty
just
face.
Just sucking? Yeah.
Not just sucking.
Oh, yeah. She sucks in this. I began to question whether she was actually any good at anything.
Wow.
I mean...
Give me an example. What didn't work for you?
I'm talking about her like her entire career because what she first came on the scene for me in Austin Powers, right?
Okay, so you never saw Dangerous Ground with
no,
Ice Cube?
No, I don't think I did. Is she okay in that?
She's all right in that, yeah.
I don't know. I just thought in a movie like this, and this is where I give Matthew Perry a bit of a pass because, like you said, we have seen him be better. We know he's got some act. I don't know if you call it acting chops,
you
but
didn't like
at least
her in
comedic
Bedazzled?
Timing.
You didn't like Elizabeth Hurley in Bedazzled?
Not really. Well, here's the thing. Like, she's got one of the. I don't think she's very smart in real life. And that kind of shines through. And in a role like this, where this movie is hinging completely on the chemistry between the two leads.
Which there's none. There's absolutely none.
Joe,
chemistry.
I was thinking back to last week's Short Circuit 2. I think Ben and Sandy had better chemistry in Short Circuit 2.
That was like Vivian Leigh and Clark Gable. Was it Vivian Leigh in Gone with the Wind? God damn it! I can't remember. I can't remember her name.
That doesn't sound right. But
yeah,
maybe.
I think Vivian Leigh was in Psycho.
Yeah.
It was a different Leigh.
Who's the chick? Whatever. Scarlet and Red.
Yeah, Scarlet and Red had much more. You know, they made them look like Scarlet and Red.
Yes.
No, there's absolutely no chemistry. When they actually like hook up in this movie,
oh, please.
It's so forced and ridiculous. And the thing is, like, it's so paper thin too.
Oh, yeah.
Because the moment something kind of goes wrong, she's like, "You fucked it up. Get out."
Yeah. Like, whoa, tenuous relationship.
Wait a minute.
It's like, all tinging on.
Thought there was like some kind of a relationship forming there.
But conversely, like the only thing he's attracted to her for is like her body. Like anytime he's complimenting her, it's like, "Oh, I can't believe a guy would cheat on somebody as beautiful and gorgeous as you." Like, you know, it has right. nothing to do with
never saying like as brilliant,
charismatic
and funny exactly. as you are.
She's always like your tits and your hair.
Your tits and your hair.
I mean, I read between the lines.
Is that what you say?
I was reading between the lines.
Is that what you say to women?
No, because I respect
do you,
women.
Does Joel Bernstein go up like, in a bar and be like, "Hey, baby, yeah. I love your tits and your hair"?
Not in that order. Sometimes it's hair and then tits. No, I'm just saying I respect women for the equal creatures that they are, Joe. Whereas,
yeah, sure, you
Chandler
do.
In this movie is just all about you're hot. Why would anybody leave you? Because right. you're hot. Because you're eye candy.
Okay,
but to be honest, like that's all she's really giving him in this movie.
That's all that's required of the part, you know. Like,
I know, but don't you imagine like if a better actress were in this, like if Natalie Portman? She's not my recast, but I'll call her out. If Natalie Portman were in that role, you'd still get a glimmer of Jesus. Have you seen Thor? Have you seen?
Yeah, I've
like,
seen Thor.
As awful
I think she's
as those
horrible
movies
in that.
Are,
I think she's horrible. I think the chemistry that she has with Chris Hemsworth,
well, sure,
is really bad.
Chemistry,
schmemistry, so
but
don't shake your head. It's my opinion, asshole. I can.
He's talking to Jeff, not me.
Yeah, I'm
by
talking
the way.
To Jeff right now. Jeff's like sitting here going, "Nope, tremors."
It will never live that down. I like Tremors too, for the record.
No, okay, no, there's no chemistry. I feel like we're never going to get past this point.
No, it's okay. Well, yeah, agree to disagree, Joe.
I guess we'll have to agree to disagree on it because I do think that she's got a little bit more going on
right.
than you're giving her credit for. And there's no way I'm going to make you see that. And there's no way that you're going to make me agree
well,
with you on this.
At least in this
point.
Movie, this movie wasn't making me see that because
no.
she's always just kind of like smiley and. Maybe she was trying to elicit an emotion.
I don't
from,
think there's.
Chandler.
I really, honestly, I can't put it on her. I think it's
all
the
right.
direction. Once you, if
well,
you've worked
true.
With someone acting wise, when you work with someone that you have no chemistry with, there is nothing you can do. There's absolutely nothing you can do if you don't have the chemistry and the director doesn't know how to bring that out of you guys. There's no way the actor is going to be able to fix
but
that.
But isn't that what acting is?
No,
like
no,
I've heard
not.
Stories
it's
of
not the actor's job to be like, okay. I'm going to force this chemistry. I'm going to. That's up to the director. The director's the one that's seeing this from an objective point of view, from an outside point of view.
Okay.
They're the one that's supposed to be able to go, okay, I think I've locked down what it is, the problem between
okay.
you guys, and I think I know a way we can fake it.
I hear
like,
you.
Obviously, you wouldn't say that to a couple of actors.
Got it.
But it finally, like that, the director is the final line.
And no, so you're right.
The director needs to. There are some people that just need to be directed. You know, I've worked with plenty of actors where some actors are really intuitive.
Yeah.
In fact, we just did a workshop performance of one
oh,
of my
yeah.
scripts this past
How'd that
weekend.
Go?
It went well. Thank
nice.
You.
Sorry, I missed it.
But you know, even going through that situation and kind of working with the diverse talent that we had, they're all great. But you get to see like some people need to be worked with a little bit more. They kind of require more attention.
But Joe,
it doesn't make them a bad actor. They just require a little bit more, you know, focus.
Right.
Whereas then you have other actors that kind of look at the script and kind of know where to go with it.
All right.
It
well, you're being very politically correct, but I think you're making my point for me, which is like if you're a good actor or actress, I guess we just call them all actors now.
Actors,
don't we?
Yeah,
actors. That's their job. They should be able to. I've heard stories of movies like where the two leads hated each other, but you wouldn't know it on screen. Like that's your job.
Hate is something else.
Oh yeah.
Because hate is
you can
also
draw
passionate.
From it, right?
You can draw from that.
Are you getting all Yoda on me?
I am getting Yoda.
What
on
What does
you.
Hate lead to?
Suffering.
Leads to suffering. Nicely done. Lobbed you that softball.
I love
fucking
that. I love that Jedi math.
Yeah.
Jedi
anger equals hate. Hate leads. How does it go?
No, it's fear leads
fear
to
leads
anger.
To anger.
Anger leads to
hate.
Hate leads,
leads
to
suffering. We need to do another episode on episode one.
We do.
How
in fact, Walt
is.
Was talking about wanting to like revisit that when we were working. He did the show.
Walt Disney?
And no, Walt Throne.
Flanagan?
The guy who did the Star Wars
I
podcast.
I know, Walt.
Us. Why don't you be a little bit more respectful?
We go way back.
He's someone who's really nice about you.
No, I love that guy.
Maybe. No. Too late now. It's
no,
too late
no,
now.
No, seriously. I saw him in a museum a couple of months ago, and he was very cordial. Introduced me to his girlfriend.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. We had chemistry.
Oh, that
Not like Elizabeth Hurley.
Elizabeth Hurley, Matthew Perry.
No chemistry.
Absolutely none. And I think is she like contractually obligated to lose her pants in every movie she's in?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, that's the only reason I would see her in a film.
Here's the weird thing about this. This movie comes out in what, 2002?
2002.
So this is well after 9/11.
Wow, and you are reading my mind now. These are some of my notes.
There's some crazy shit going on in this movie.
In an airport.
Like, right. Post 9/11, these folks are able to sneak into, like, the baggage area.
Thank
of
you.
Airport.
Yeah. Are two civilians allowed to just, like, head dive down, like, the luggage, the little treadmill?
Yeah.
There's no security back there at all.
There's no security. And the thing is, like, you would think that's one of the places where, like, security would be posted to make sure nobody jumps back there.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't want to put a bomb in your luggage.
Yeah.
That's the place to do it.
And apparently that's where you check your luggage now, like, in DFW Airport, is where you would bring your dog as well. You just bring your dog.
Yeah, so let's do the checklist. So they break back there, where all the luggage is. Matthew Perry lets loose a rabid pit bull on
Vinnie Pastore.
Poor Vinnie Pastore. And nobody, like, there's no security around. There's no cops or anything. Yeah, this is 2002. And it wasn't like this was being filmed before 9/11. Like, this... Because it came out in, like, August of 2002.
Yeah.
So
it was well into.
They had to.
And they had plenty of time.
Yeah.
They had plenty of time while Matthew Perry was in rehab.
Yeah.
They had plenty of time to go, huh, this whole part in the airport, maybe we should fix this.
That's my favorite.
Why they show, like, the luggage getting, like, handled and stuff on these little treadmill things, and, like, it's getting thrown and just punched,
hammered,
and
machines
hammered.
That are meant to break whatever you have inside of your luggage,
right?
Just whatever G forces are being pushed.
Uh huh. I get what they were trying to go for in that sequence too, like the whole we're gonna do like Indy and what was her name from Temple of Doom? Willie Scott.
Willie, thank
Indy
you.
And Willie, and they were trying to kind of create that whole chemistry between the two of them going through the whole airport, the luggage thing, but it was so. The only way I could describe this, and it might not make any sense, but the best way I could describe like how they were trying so hard to create. To elicit an emotion from the audience, but failing so horribly at it, I would call this Superman 4.
Oh, wow. Is that the quest for peace?
It's the quest for peace.
Mm-hmm. With Richard Pryor?
No. Richard Pryor was in Superman
3. The third one. Okay.
The quest for peace was the canon film Superman.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing was, like, they couldn't get the flying effects down, so they kind of just borrowed from previous movies.
No way.
And they only had, like, two or three shots. And they would just keep recycling those shots whenever Superman had to fly. And so, like, you're maybe about 10, 15 minutes into this movie, and you've already seen Superman try to fly, like, two or three times. And, like, that whole... I mean, they based the whole advertising campaign on the first Superman movie on You Will Believe a Man Can Fly.
Yeah.
And, like, that's so far from the truth. When you're watching Superman 4, it breaks your heart. Like, you are trying to be into it. You're trying to be invested, trying to be engaged, but you're just not feeling that emotion that they are trying to pull out of you. And that's kind of how I felt watching these two. This comes back to just the chemistry that they had. I felt like you're not getting it. You're not getting it. You guys aren't giving. You're not given the tools necessary.
Nope.
You're not given the direction necessary to get this out of me. I don't care. I don't care if you guys end up together or not at the end of this movie.
No, I was hoping they wouldn't.
wow.
I'm just saying, more Elizabeth Hurley for me. Hey, quick little tangent as you're talking about that Superman 4. What a reversal of philosophies Hollywood has had, because nowadays it's the complete opposite. Like. Now all they do is, like, we got to make sure the effects look good. We got to make sure we're going to pump all the money into, you know, ILM.
Uh-huh.
And who cares about the script or the plot? We're going to get some actors, and they're just going to stand in front of a green screen.
But then you get some filmmakers that do it right.
Absolutely.
And that brings me to, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, which Sarah and I saw last night.
Yeah. Had she not seen it yet?
She hadn't seen it yet.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't believe that movie is still in theaters.
It's still in theaters.
2 months on.
Yeah. And, God, still
deserves
just,
to be.
Still just as good.
Yeah.
But that's an example of, like, wow, you've got a competent filmmaker who knows how to, he brought you a story with some substance and also some effects. For the most part, you're right. I mean, they base whole movies around just a special effect now. What was that one movie, Into the Storm? That came out like 2-3 months ago, just about a huge tornado.
Oh yeah, that's right. With like teenagers getting sucked out of drainage pipes.
Yeah, it was like it was attack. Like that's the thing that really upsets me about fucking movies is that we can have a film that runs for an hour and a half, 2 hours. That's about a tornado that fucking has like a grudge against like two or three people and basically chases them for the entirety of a movie.
And not even any sharks either. No, like no totally wasted. Where were the sharks in that tornado?
Right, that
is what
was,
I was asking.
That was what was missing.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie culminates into this big hurrah on the ranch, this cattle ranch.
Oh my God.
That Bruce Campbell and Elizabeth Hurley actually own. And when they get on the ranch, like, it's this dumb incognito moment where Matthew Perry and Elizabeth Hurley. Thank you. You don't have to finish my sentence.
I
it's
can
like
tell
finishing
you were...
a sentence for a stutterer. Like, that's really rude. No, I'm playing. And so they go to this, like, this barn door opens. They're like, thank God you're here. And they bring them into the barn. It's like, oh God, what's going to happen
this whole
now?
Thing again.
And they totally, like, out of nowhere, like, it's... I want to say that this is completely uncharacteristic to the entire movie because we don't really encounter something like this until now. But then at the same time, it kind of fits the movie because whole movie is just a bunch of fucking nonsense.
Yeah.
So like they think he's a vet and he has to massage the prostate of a bull.
Joe, this is embarrassing.
Yeah.
Even for fucking Chandler.
Yeah.
This is probably probably witnessed on screen him deciding he was going to go into rehab.
He's going to go into rehab.
Like, he's like, I'm checking myself in as soon as he yells cut.
Or the reason he had to go to rehab that he just went home and went on a bender.
He said he was
passed out in his hotel room and they're like, we need to get you some help. He's like, I milked the prostate.
Yeah, he's got
and like the
inappropriate.
Well, what was creepy was like the weird mechanical cow
that the
bull had to mount.
Yes.
That was so fucking weird.
You basically got to see this animatronic have an orgasm.
Yeah.
Like seriously, they have Jeff, did you see this movie?
No.
Jeff will never see this
movie. I'm
gonna
let you borrow the DVD.
No.
Fast forward to chapter 17.
Just like Showdown in Little Tokyo.
go see Joe in his red coat 36 minutes in and then fast forward to an hour 4.
Yes.
And watch this animatronic cow get raped.
Far too long. This movie runs way too long. So they have to do that and then that leads to some big chase and
Terry Crews shows up
and
crashes a car.
Like, just rams into a fucking car. Like, these people are homicidal. He's shooting a gun.
Yeah, and then pulls out a firearm as they're running away. It's like, this guy's just trying to serve some divorce papers.
Right.
Can we get a little perspective here, folks? Yeah. Like, this isn't life or death situation.
Like, you
we don't
be,
need a body count.
If he serves you papers, if he's trying to serve you papers and you shoot him, that's fucking murder.
You're going
murder.
To prison. You
you're going to, yes, you're going to prison.
You can't make
that.
The case. Well, my
Someone
boss.
Someone else is going to serve you papers.
The oilman rancher with the cowboy hat.
Right.
I'm his bodyguard and he tells me not to let him serve. So,
so I killed
I get
this
to
guy.
Use force, right? No, Terry Crews. President Camacho, you know the rules. Forever President Camacho.
Have you ever seen the movie
Idiocracy? Yes.
No, not Idiocracy. It was another movie that he did with Luke Wilson.
Mm.
And God, it's this awesome like mob movie where
Home Fries.
No, dude. It's the movie about like the guys that started like internet security for porn sites.
Interesting.
Yeah, I can't remember what the name of it was, but
Jeff
knows it. It was
not Insider Man.
Although that'd be a great name for it.
Why don't you look it up there on the iPad? So it's
Joe's going to spill his drink all over your
equipment. It's about these guys that created the whole billing cycle for porn sites. It's
interesting.
Giovanni Ribisi and Gabriel Macht play these two guys that they created. Like they created like pay for porn sites, and the thing was like there wasn't like this standard way of like protected billing.
Hmm.
And so that's when they brought in Luke Wilson. And Luke Wilson's kind of the guy that, like, he revolutionized the whole billing, you know, billing for porn sites. And so that way it doesn't say, like, you know, porn. And they actually ended up making so much fucking money that, like, this ended up, like, the mob got involved.
Oh, that sounds
and
fascinating.
At one point, Terry Crews, what was it called?
Middlemen.
Oh, I have heard of
it's
this.
It's so good. And at one point, like... Terry Crews plays like Luke Wilson's best friend, and at one point, like one of the mob guys threatens Luke Wilson's kid, and Terry Crews is his godfather or whatever, and he just fucking straight up punches the dude, kills him, and so now it's this whole story about like how they've got to figure this shit out and make things right with the Russian mob before shit gets out of hand. It's such a good movie.
It sounds like a good movie.
But I mean, it just feels like Terry Crews up until that point was just what we saw in this movie and in Idiocracy.
Yeah.
Where he was just crazy-ass President Camacho.
Yep.
But the fact that the dude has some depth that he can play with.
No, he's good. Yeah.
What happened after that point? Like, I think Bruce Campbell did get away.
Yeah, because they get away because the actual veterinarians show up, so they steal their truck, get the hell out of there, and then it's on to the rodeo at Reunion Arena.
No, because at one they're having lunch. Bruce Campbell's having lunch with some guys, and they trace him there, and then he chases Bruce Campbell, even though he's having lunch like in downtown, like the West End, suddenly he's running past like the Las Colinas ponies.
Well, we know that, but nobody who doesn't live in Dallas knows that.
I was like, that's not what's here. That's totally, I mean, he just went from one side of town to the other and then goes to not Reunion Arena.
The Magic of Editing.
The Union Arena.
Oh, is that what they called it?
That's what they called it throughout the whole movie.
It totally sounded like they were saying Reunion Arena.
No, and I think that's why, like, because they're saying the Union Arena.
Couldn't get the trademark.
The Union Arena. And so they said, they kept saying, but that made me think, like, is Reunion like trademarked? Is that like a company?
You can trademark, yeah, a name.
That's I know you can trademark a name, but I'm just kind of curious, like, because you could say that on sports broadcasts and stuff, like we're broadcasting live from Reunion Arena.
That's true, but it's a fact, like you're reporting news basically, and this is all fiction. Yeah, like you'd have to sign off to have the rights. I mean, I guess I don't know. I know I worked with people, so much.
That's so weird. But, well, yeah, no, that's right. Bruce Campbell goes into the arena, and he's only got, like, minutes. And they're trying to serve him because if they serve him, they'll have technically served him an hour before.
Okay. I take umbrage, Joe, with this plot point.
Yes, you should. It doesn't seem to make sense.
There's a couple of holes in here. Okay, so we're introduced, and Joe, we have this conversation all the time about a movie that like sets up its own rules.
And then breaks them.
Yeah. And this one does it in a couple different ways. Big Pussy, what's his name?
Tony.
Vincent Pastore. Okay, so the other, not mobster, what is he?
The
other processor. Server. Yeah, thank you. Who is trying to serve Sarah, and actually does serve Sarah. Oh, we missed that whole plot point where Amy Adams and him.
Oh, yeah, Amy
double
Adams
cross,
acts like she wants to turn on Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
And then brings in Vinny Pastore. That, like, I guess nobody noticed. Like, he never noticed Vinny Pastore was coming up in the elevator or something.
He's a big Italian guy. He's like 6'2 and 500 pounds.
So weird.
Yeah, a little bit. But
Sarah Moore.
I actually.
You're hereby processed.
I didn't quite see that coming. So I was like, all right, nice little shift there. I like that. So Vinny does. We set up in the very first scene in the movie, you know, when somebody is being served in this ludicrous. Poker James Bond sort of scene that Matthew Perry does. Yeah. He introduces the character.
You take a picture of the person with the papers with your watch.
With your watch. So that way you can see the time, you can see the person. I guess that's all admissible in court. Yeah. So he sets that up. Vinny does the same thing to Sarah when he's serving her, except his watch is still on East Coast time.
It's still on East Coast time.
We're in Central time here. You get an hour difference. And when Matthew Perry sees that photo and realizes it, he calls Cedric the Entertainer, says, you know, the watch is off. So basically, they have an hour.
They have an hour
to serve Bruce
because
Campbell.
It's Central time in Texas.
Exactly. It's a race against time. Joe, do you think that would hold up in court?
I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure that.
I don't think that would hold up at all.
I don't think so
either. I'm pretty sure it would be like, no, she's processed.
Yeah, a jury of our peers would say, it was just Eastern time.
Chronologically.
Yes.
I served her first.
By Earth time.
Yes.
I had an hour on you.
It doesn't matter. It was a dumb way. Like, they were trying to be far too clever.
Yeah.
To try to think their way out of that whole, like, oh, so we need that drama of her getting served first.
Right.
But then they've got to, like, get
back
at them.
We need a chase scene.
Yeah, exactly. Because this movie didn't have enough fucking chase scenes in it.
Well, you needed a palate cleanser after the bull raping scene.
Oh, my God.
But then, Joe, the most infuriating part about this whole needing to take a picture of your watch is, did you notice this? At the end, he finally serves Bruce Campbell.
Uh-huh.
Snaps a photo of him. No watch.
He took a photo with the Jumbotron in the back.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, that's what he had angled it out. So he took a picture of Bruce Campbell with the papers, and then you saw like the Jumbotron in the back with the time on it.
I did not notice that. I might have been watching like a cropped version or something.
Maybe.
Or I just was unattentive.
Because,
But you know what? It would have been nice to reinforce that, to actually show the photo that he took. Because it totally went over my head.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's my bad then.
Nope. They didn't take the time to do that, but... But yeah, no, he totally took a picture with the Jumbotron in the back with the time on it.
Okay, I didn't see the Jumbotron.
No, but I agree. I just think that whole thing about taking a picture with the watch, I think that's broken. I think there was a far more creative way that they could have done this whole thing about, you know, this is when you were served. That's all. That's it. It doesn't need... And oh my God, like this movie is like so dated with all the pagers. There's so many. No one has a cell phone in this movie.
Exactly. No, you're right. Yeah, it's 2002.
It's 2002.
Not 1992.
Nobody has a fucking. Are you kidding? Nobody has a cell phone in this movie. Everyone has a pager.
Wow, I never realized.
Yes.
Oh, because that would fuck their whole plot up. Like, things could easily be solved.
People would be able to talk to each other.
Hey,
really
Cedric.
Quick.
Yo, it's me. Entertainer.
What's up, man? I'm dancing.
You call him Mr. Entertainer? What do you call
Mr. the Entertainer.
Is that what it says on his
birth
certificate?
Wow.
Would have been embarrassing if he grew up not to be entertaining.
What was... Yeah, right. Mom and Pop the Entertainers would be really upset. How did you feel about the weird like B-plot of like him trying to be a wine connoisseur, like having his own vineyard and
well,
stuff?
Well, it was weak, but it didn't bother me just because it wasn't reinforced at all. Like, there's one scene early on where he's brewing some wine. You call it brewing wine? Barreling wine. Who knows? keep them in barrels, right? What do you call that shit? This word's slipping my tongue.
I'm just waiting.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. We get one scene, and he's like, is it ready yet? And he's kind of talking to himself, takes a sip and spits it out. In what I suppose was supposed to be a hilarious spit take a la Chandler.
Better than yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. But then we never, like, it's never spoken about in dialogue. We never see, usually something like that, you got to do it in threes, right?
Well, you got to do it in threes, or if you're going to set something like that up, have there be some kind of significance to him being some, like, amateur wine maker, and maybe bring that back somewhere in the movie where he's like, no, that's not true, because in order to do that, you would have to ferment this and da-da-da.
Ferment.
Or like, there's a chemical. Maybe there's some kind of chemical involved in, you know, making wine that he could have used on, like, the documents.
Yeah.
And like, oh, right here, I can see where he fudged the documents because of this thing. You know, that would have been more interesting, and it would have...
It would have made
more sense that, like, oh, he's doing this. That's why we've introduced this whole thing. Because the only reason they introduced it is because at the end, they have a vineyard.
A vineyard.
This guy can't make one decent batch of wine, and you're really going to sink all that money you get in your settlement into a fucking winery?
For nothing. Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
It's ridiculous. I felt the same way when Elizabeth Hurley breaks into Bruce Campbell's house. And they have that whole confrontation with Amy Adams. She steals, like, money out of the bull's ass. Not an actual bull this time.
Yeah, I got you.
A statue of a bull. And then what do they do with it? They blow it on, like,
On a
five-star hotel. It's like, bitch, all your credit cards have been canceled. You're about to get you have been served once. It could happen again.
Yeah.
Maybe you stock away your nest egg instead of just blowing it
Maybe sell the Jag.
There you go. How about that? Before Terry Crews crushes it with his truck again.
Talk about how racist this movie is.
Oh, yeah, let's.
How about the part where Cedric the Entertainer is talking to Vinny Pastore, and he calls him Wop-Along Cassidy?
Wop-Along Cassidy. And then he says something else. He has a line about, like, there's only three brilliant white men. What was it, like, Benjamin Franklin, Rocky from the first movie?
Rocky from the first movie. Yeah, that's right. Rocky from the first movie.
All right. I don't think that's funny, but whatever.
I'm looking over my notes.
Not nearly as racist.
Anything else? So when they're in they go to the Union Arena at the end, and they're afraid they're not going to catch him in time.
Mm.
So what they do is they go up and find the board operator. And they're hey, we need you to pretend like this, you know, we've got this guy. I'm with so-and-so because I'm clever and I'm Matthew Perry. And we keep every once in a while when it's convenient, we come back to the fact that maybe I'm a clever guy. And I've come up with this, you know, scenario where this guy's carrying the Ebola virus. And now you've got to warn the people in the arena. And so that's what happens. They put Bruce Campbell's picture up on the Jumbotron. They're like, if this guy's sitting next to you, he may be carrying the Ebola virus.
Back away slowly.
Back away slowly. People start running, and so that way they're able to locate him. And then, like, he gets up to get away, and, like, everyone draws a gun, because that's a great stereotype,
Texas.
It's Texas. And so that's where they're able to get him. And, you know, they got, like, the monster truck comes out, and it's driven by Vinny Pastore.
Oh, my God.
Terry Crews has a motorcycle or some shit. And Vinny runs over Terry Crews.
He would have been killed, Joe. Yeah, no, he would have been crushed to death.
Everyone in this movie should be dead. Everyone in this movie should have died at one point or another. Chandler Bing should have been killed by the fucking mobsters.
Excuse me, that's Chandler Bong.
They fucking beat him up outside this house.
Just
they
mercilessly.
Beat the shit out of him and then take his car. He should have died.
Yeah.
They would have fucking put a hit on him.
If it were real mobsters, yes.
Yes. Sarah probably would have been dead going through that fucking airport and getting caught by the goddamn the luggage thing.
Oh, yeah.
She probably would have gotten torn up.
Fucking Tony would have been mauled to death by that dog
before he even
made it to the reunion arena at the end.
Cedric the Entertainer probably would have had a heart attack moving the way he moves around.
Is he still alive?
Yeah, Cedric the Entertainer's still with us.
Get him and Bernie Mac is confused.
Gone.
I know.
Because you're racist.
Got to scratch out that recasting.
Because you're racist.
No.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about with this movie?
Well, you know, we were just talking about how kind of unclever Matthew Perry is and how like dangerous some of the things in this movie that are happening, especially in the airport. We glossed over earlier in the scene the way that he sneaks into the building in New York where Sarah is staying. You remember this?
Oh, yeah, the plumber.
He rolls a burning tire into the lobby.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, I didn't. He's just like, I was thinking about
how am I
going to
sneak past security?
He rolls a burning tire into a building.
And there's, I don't know, yeah, and it's like,
that's,
wow.
That's like, that's how he sneaks by.
Needlessly complicated.
It's not, but the thing is about it, it's not complicated. It's not clever.
Well, it's not clever.
It's just like, it wasn't even shocking.
Reckless.
There's so much. There's so much that happens in this movie that they're like, "Oh man, the audience is really going to react when this happens." Yeah. And you're just like, throughout the whole movie, I'm just sitting there like,
"Yeah,
all right."
You know, could have been made up for if this were directed by like Michael Bay, or at least the camera was moving.
Yeah,
we haven't really talked about the look of this movie aside from that Dallas looks
so
ugly.
Flat. It's
very
such
flat.
A flat movie.
It's shot like a Mexican telenovela.
And that's why I was saying like it felt more like it was a pilot to a TV show than it was supposed to be a movie. Mm-hmm. There really wasn't a film feel to this movie at all. It felt so small in scope.
It did, really? Yeah, I know. For it having
for
it's supposed to be set
people,
in like five different cities.
Yes, for like you know, and it's like okay, we dress up Vinny in a fucking coat, and
now he's in Bangor.
Now he's in Bangor, Maine.
Sure, put him in a Cuban cab.
A Cuban cab in the middle of Dallas.
Right,
and now he's in Miami.
Yeah, but they put that orange and blue filter on it, like CSI Miami.
Oh my God,
that's how you know it's Miami.
It's so funny, just because like I remember sitting in. There was a restaurant across the street from the hotel that they were filming in. There was a restaurant across the street. And we were just sitting looking out the window. And it was a hot day. It was a really hot day. And there was just like
Dallas, Texas,
a whole army of fucking cars, people that they hired to just sit in a fucking road in their car for fucking hours, like all day.
It's movie magic.
While they captured this one fucking shot. It was ridiculous. I felt so bad for all those people while I was drinking my cold water and hanging out in the air conditioner.
It's things like that. That's why I didn't get into the biz.
Yeah.
I'm on this side of the microphone.
No. So there were a couple of you know, when you say that, it reminds me of when they go into the health club in Texas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And like, why is he pretending he's British?
Oh, yeah. He does a couple of like really bad accents in this movie.
Right. Well, and that's what brings me back to like, is he trying to be like Ace Ventura? Is he trying to be, you know,
Eddie Murphy from Beverly Hills Cop?
Because it's not working.
No.
I kind of almost feel like this movie maybe was supposed to be written for an Eddie Murphy instead.
Well, yeah. Matthew Perry is not who you. He's not at the top of your list when you're casting this movie.
No, sir. He's not at the top of my list for any movie.
They may have tried to get Joey Tribbiani before Chandler,
Matt
Ross.
LeBlanc, the other Matt.
Not Ross, though.
No.
Nobody gets
it. I understand that.
He's too busy doing Nazi movies.
All right, what else about this film?
Well, I just think this is an appropriate time to say that not only did we hate this movie, Joe, but audiences alike hated this movie. 4% on Rotten Tomato. This may be lowest Rotten Tomato rated movie we've ever done.
Holy!
I don't
shit.
Know. That's somebody's got to add up all the ratings.
I'm
and
just
put
surprised
it on the
that many people have watched it and then thought to review it on Rotten Tomato.
4%. It had a budget of $29 million. I can't imagine where all that money went.
Probably Liz Hurley. She was hot at the time.
I guess so. Right.
She's coming
right
off
after
of Austin
Powers.
And Bedazzled.
Yeah.
So this was kind of a bit. This was a big deal.
I guess so. Only made $17 million locally, just under $17 million, and internationally $20 million. They weren't really helping that additional $3 million. So I think maybe it made its money back. DVD
maybe.
And cable, but certainly not at the time.
Dude, I have not seen this movie on cable.
Yeah.
So I would be surprised.
It's like Cinemax. Like
what
not real cable.
What did the movie do right, Joel?
You know, I like Cedric the Entertainer, actually. And I know it's just because he's when you're surrounded by piles of shit, you smell pretty good. Yeah, and also all of his scenes.
What quote is that?
Wise men once said. Confucius said.
I feel like if you're surrounded by shit, you're gonna smell like shit too.
No, but I'm saying in comparison.
That's like a you are judged by the company you keep.
All right, this is an aside. So I had this thought today. Now that we're talking about smelling like shit, I stepped into the bathroom at work, and somebody was just like dropping like a huge, just like steaming pile. But they weren't doing that courtesy flush. Like, I don't know about you, but when I'm taking a shit.
Courtesy flush.
But I do it immediately.
I try not to do that in public restrooms.
I'm pretty regular. 10 o'clock, That coffee starts kicking in. It's maybe a little TMI, but at least I try to do the thing where I don't even want it to like remain in the bowl. Like as it's evacuating my bowels, I hit the flush. Yeah. It's like it was never there.
The Bernsen bombs.
So I'm there at the urinal, and this guy's stinking up the place. And I remember reading somewhere that what you're smelling, you're actually smelling like little particles, the
with
fecal
your
matter.
You're tasting.
Yeah. So like there's fecal matter all around me. I'm feet away from this guy, and that's why I'm smelling this.
That's awesome.
We're gonna cut this part out of the podcast.
I hope you enjoy this, Editing Bay listeners.
If you learn nothing else,
you've learned that when you're smelling shit, you're actually tasting shit.
Yes.
Wonderful.
And it's on your skin.
And when you're watching Serving Sarah, you're watching shit.
Nicely done.
So what did this movie do right? Cedric the Entertainer?
It was Cedric the Entertainer. I thought he was funny in his scenes. And again, he was alone in a room for the most part. But man, you're talking about that guy. He was giving it his all. He was trying to pull some laughs out of this movie. And I chuckled at a few of his reactions.
Okay.
Him doing the punching bag.
Yeah.
When he was getting frustrated.
Yeah, that's fine.
But that's not saying much.
Nope. It really isn't.
What about you?
I'd have to, along those same lines, but with like Bruce Campbell and Terry Crews.
Oh, yeah. Bruce. Oh, yeah.
I liked them.
All right.
I thought they did it. I felt like if those characters existed in a different movie,
right,
it probably would have been fantastic.
The side characters.
But unfortunately, this movie just, it wasted those two people.
Well, what did it do wrong for you, Joe? What was your least favorite?
My least favorite thing about this movie was just the direction.
Yeah.
It's so tough because the script, just from what we get from the movie, the dialogue, the characters, the way they're fleshed out is poor.
Absence.
It's very bad. No, absence perfectly an adequate way to sum that up.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And the direction, though, is so fucking bad. It's so bad. I don't know if Reginald Hudlin needs like less people, like if maybe he's a little bit better directing two people, like Kid and Play. And he's like, okay, I can direct you, and then like my PAs can do the rest of the stuff.
Yeah.
But like, no. I have a feeling like that this is like the biggest cast, like the biggest names that he's directed. I mean, other than Eddie Murphy and Halle Berry.
Yeah.
Halle Berry wasn't really a big deal in
Boomer.
Not
at the time, no.
But Eddie Murphy was kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
But he'd already worked with Martin Lawrence, and he was in Boomerang.
That's
as
right.
Well.
Yeah. So it can't be that.
I don't know what it is. I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe he was just kind of in over his head with a picture like this. It is less intimate than Boomerang. It's a lot more wider in scope. It's slapsticky. It's comedy. And he just might not have the chops for comedy
like
this.
Yeah, that's not his forte. It's a tough thing.
Yeah, it really is. But the direction was weak. I feel like all the shortcomings in the performances, I feel like, those do fall on the performers for the most part, but also the director, and I've said this a million times, the director needs to know how to pull that stuff out. The director needs to know how to pull that out in a way that at least he and the editor can get together and make it look good.
Find those little moments.
And that was absent. It felt like this whole movie was filmed with one camera. Like they only had access to one camera, and they were like, "All right, shoot it." And now, all right, stop. We're going to set up on the other side.
They could have
shoot it, and that's it.
Conceivably done that. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, like there's. I want to touch on just one last thing.
Touch it.
Like there's when they left the health club and Bruce Campbell got away. There's this part where they get in the car, and she's like, "So, what do we do next?"
Yes,
and he like. And the really awkward thing is they're looking straight into the camera. Instead of finding each other's eye lines, they're looking right into the camera. And he says something like, well, first off, you need to find the off button on your mouth. I'm like, what? Why? Like, what?
Just mean-spirited and not funny.
It's not cute.
No.
Like, it wasn't cute banter. It wasn't Han and Leia in Empire Strikes
Back.
No,
yeah.
It was just, it was awkward and mean towards each other.
And that's what made her reactions even more infuriating because she just kind of like laughs everything off.
Yeah, she's just like, "Oh, you,
oh Chandler."
And I'm like, "Wow, this is not coming across as endearing or cute as you guys wanted it to be."
Yeah,
maybe it would if you had cast different people in the movie.
Ooh.
Joel, what do you think about that?
It's a nice segue.
Yeah, I think so. I like to ride it around in the mall.
Hold on.
Segway, like a mall security guard?
I got what you're saying. Hold on, my stuff hasn't updated yet. I gotta get my Evernote on my phone.
Oh, Jesus.
No, I got it. Here we go.
All right.
What do you want to start from the bottom to the top?
Sure, because I've got mine kind of scattered all over the place.
Do you? All right.
So we'll start with whoever that it is that you want to start with.
Got about seven or eight here. I'm going to start at the bottom. You want to ping-pang?
Let's ping-pang.
Ping-pang.
Ping-pang, Joel.
Let's So racist.
Jesus. While I'm going through my casting, too, can you please like write out what you want to say about the website when we plug it later?
Sure. Oh, I've already got it in my notes.
Okay, good.
We're good now. Let's copy-paste. How about the Cedric the Entertainer character?
All right.
Again, like I said, he was my favorite. He brought a little bit of energy, and he kind of tied these characters together.
Ray.
Is that the character's name?
Yeah, Ray.
I don't remember any of the characters' names.
Cedric the Entertainer.
But it doesn't matter. And this is an actor.
Before you do this, yeah. I want to show Jeff this.
Uh-oh.
Because on this one...
Oh.
I made predictions of what Joel...
You son of a bitch.
I made predictions of what Joel is going to pick.
You might be right on a couple, but they're my also-rans.
All right.
You're not going to
okay,
see
it. I just want to make sure that I've got eyes here that Jeff has seen it before I go, oh, dude, I knew you were going to say that. Okay.
Do you need to take a picture with your watch in the background so we know what time it was?
No, I've got a picture of it with the Jumbotron in the back.
You fucker.
I didn't even notice that.
All right, go ahead.
Cedric the Entertainer, this is an actor we talked about... A couple of weeks ago, when he was Mr. Svenning in Mallrats, I'm talking about Michael Rooker,
uh-huh.
Because you need somebody who's kind of... I'm picturing him almost as the... What's his character's name in Guardians? Zandu?
Yondu.
Yondu. Oh, I was uh-huh. close. It was yeah. one letter off.
He was Xanadu?
He was Xanadu. Yondu?
Yondu.
Yondu. That Yondu. Doesn't sound right, but yeah. But
EditingBay.com.
Thank you. But it's still that kind of... You know,
you feel like
he's the boss.
He
should
be blue.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, he's probably still got that makeup on, knowing how crazy Rooker is. But you know, he's kind of menacing when he has to be, but he's still funny, and I like when he gets exacerbated. So Michael Rooker in
Cedric
the Entertainer.
Michael Rooker as Ray.
How about you?
All right, for Ray, I went with Keegan Michael Key from Key and Peele.
Key and Peele.
Yeah, because I also have Jordan. I have Jordan Peele in this later.
Nice.
Because I kind of thought, you know what, I'll make this a Key and Peele kind of flick.
Well, who's Peele? Let's jump to that then.
I made him the Terry Crews role.
The Terry Crews. Nice.
Vernon with like and straight up with like his like his big bushy mustache.
Yep.
And like the snake face boots or
that'd
whatever
be fun.
That he's wearing.
Except they don't have any scenes together.
And that's fine.
Doesn't matter.
They don't have to.
It's not Key and Peele. It's uh-huh. just Key, comma, Peele.
It's okay because they're funny enough to hold things up.
No, they are. I love those guys. I love that show. Well, if we're going to the Terry Crews character, what's his character's name?
Vernon.
Vernon. You need somebody.
I feel like we didn't give him enough credit with his introduction. Where like he's yeah. he's torturing a guy in the basement.
Yep. And you don't know why
what happened to a stapler.
Yeah.
Which like... I feel like is a little bit of a nod to Office Space.
It must have been, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of Mike Judge comparisons.
Yeah, that's
or,
true.
Ties. Well, I went with a big, tall, strapping black man, but I went with Michael Strahan. Are you familiar with him?
Yes.
Football player.
He used
and
to
now
play for the Giants.
Co-host of Kelly and, I guess I call it Kelly and Michael.
Kelly and
they?
Michael. Or
it's not yeah. even live with Kelly and Michael. But Michael Strahan, space between his teeth and all, because he can be funny. I don't know if you've watched that show. He's surprisingly funny.
Uh-huh.
And you can... I'm going totally with the humor in this. Like, this isn't going to be a David Fincher darker version of this movie.
That's cool. I've been wrong now on two of my predictions.
Oh, who did you have? Who did you think I was going to predict?
For Ray, I thought you were going to say Kevin Hart. For Vernon, I thought you were going to say Danny Trejo.
Oh, yeah, that would have been good.
I thought, so far, you're doing really good.
Nice.
I'm not able to predict what
you're
going
to win
say.
If
you don't
you're
win
wrong.
Anything. You win the satisfaction of me making a fool out of myself that's, predicting that you
well, that's something. That's something.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to move on to the Amy Adams character.
Please
she's the hot
do.
Blonde that Bruce Campbell is cheating
the name
on.
Of the character is Kate.
Kate's, in my version, Kate is played by Blake Lively, because you need somebody vapid and blonde and hot.
Uh-huh.
And Blake Lively is check, check, and check.
Oh, okay. I didn't go with blonde.
Mm.
I did go with hot. I went with Alexandra Daddario.
I don't know who that is.
She was in the Percy Jackson movies. She's like the 27 year old that
yeah.
they cast to play like a 15 year old.
Yeah,
and
oh, she
she's
cute.
Also in the first season of True Detective on HBO.
Oh, which I haven't seen yet.
Oh, okay, yeah, she's really good looking.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not that bad of an actress. She's done a couple of little horror movies as well. Hmm. I like her.
All right. I'm going to move on up to Bruce Campbell.
Gordon.
My favorite character. So you need somebody kind of Southern. Need somebody who you believe would cheat on his wife.
I thought you were going to cast Jennifer Lawrence as Kate.
No way.
I thought you were
She's
gonna,
way too I smart thought, and charismatic.
I thought you were going to cast that.
All right. No, good. You're 0 for 3, buddy.
I'm 0 for 3. No, you're doing really well.
Thank you, Joe, for that positive affirmation. Bruce Campbell. Matthew McConaughey. Yeah, or whatever
yeah.
he says. Uh-huh.
I was kind of close. I feel like I was close on
what does he say?
All right.
There you go.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say Chris Evans.
Oh, he would have been great.
He
Is that yours?
Good. No.
Oh.
I went with Ricky Gervais.
Oh, fuck.
I went with the fact that, like, he's married to a British woman.
Ah, gotcha.
That he's British as well. They're not necessarily typical cowboy,
you know,
southern kind of people.
I like that.
Yeah. I went with Ricky Gervais.
All right. You take a lot of liberties with these castings.
I do take a lot of liberties.
You change races,
this movie
and genders.
Was so bad.
trying to spice it up any way you can.
Yeah, trying to.
Well, let's see if you can spice it up with the Vincent Pastore character.
Okay.
Let's hear your.
No. You go ahead.
Because then I'm just going to say, no, you were wrong.
Exactly.
I went with Will Sasso in the Vincent Pastore
so
character.
Close.
Is it really?
So close.
Who is close to Will Sasso? Will Sasso, by the way, is from Mad TV.
From Mad TV. He was also in Drop Dead Gorgeous.
Yeah, and the Three Stooges movie.
It's
Curly.
I went with Kevin James. I thought you were going to say Kevin James. My choice was Rob Riggle.
I know the name, but I don't know what do I know him from?
He's in Let's Be Cops. He's done a lot of.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, he doesn't fit the look, but.
He doesn't fit the look, but he's like intimidating. He's a bigger guy.
Nice.
All right. Who do you got next?
Well, we got two left on my list, and that's the big.
I've got three left.
Big leads. Well, what's your random? If it's not.
My random is Rusty the board operator at the American or at Reunion Arena.
Who played him in this movie?
It was just some dude, but he was like, when they were like, there's a guy who's got Ebola, he's like, whoa!
You cast that guy?
Yeah.
Who has one scene in the third act?
Yeah.
Or who'd you cast?
His delivery. It reminded me of Jeff Earnshaw. And so that's who I cast.
There's three scenes now you need to see in this movie. You got to see Joe. You got to see the raping of the mechanical bull, right? Is that what I said? The second one was?
You just made me feel really uncomfortable with that, though.
The raping of the mechanical bull.
Oh, my.
That's what they do in Spain.
Okay.
We're almost done here.
Let's please
Elizabeth Hurley.
Sarah character. The title character.
Mm-hmm. I stuck with somebody who's British, and I went with the ever-lovely Emily Blunt, because I love her. Did I get it?
No.
Oh, who did you think I was going to do?
I thought when you first started saying that name,
Emily
I was like...
Emily Watson.
Emma Watson?
I almost did that, except I just recast her recently.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm trying to break my mold.
I feel like you don't have as much shame as I do about that, about like recasting people quite
well,
so soon.
Well, wait till you hear my next one.
All right.
No, I'm just kidding. I didn't. Who's your Emily?
Sarah?
Who's your Elizabeth?
For Sarah, I cast Rose Byrne, who we had mentioned earlier.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, she's great. She's funny.
She's much funnier than Elizabeth Hurley.
Much better actress, too.
She is.
There's a light behind those eyes.
Yes.
Not like Elizabeth Hurley. Like a doll's eyes.
She's got light behind her eyes.
She doesn't at all.
Oh, my God. Okay, so Joe, the final character, Joe.
Matthew Perry. You probably think I'm going to say Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And you would be wrong. No, no, I didn't do Joseph Gordon-Levitt. But what I did do, after my phone just locked on me, come on, wake up, you motherfucker.
Uh-huh.
Wake up. Okay, I feel like people are going to get pissed at this, but I'm a bit of an apologist because I love this kid when I saw him on Even Stevens when he was on the Disney Channel.
Damn it, I didn't
Shia LaBeouf.
I didn't get any of these
Oh,
right.
You're 0 for 7, Joe.
I didn't get any of these.
I like Shia LaBeouf in the Matthew Perry character.
Okay.
He can do comedy and he can do this role. It's time for him to make a comeback.
Okay.
It's been years since we had a Shia LaBeouf movie.
I'm going to go with Chris Pratt.
Oh, God, of course.
I think that he'd be really good.
Man.
He's very charming. He's funny.
Him and Emily Blunt would be a... Actually, him and Rose Byrne would be a nice.
Rose Byrne would look great with each other. I feel like he would probably. There was something that was so wrong about seeing Matthew Perry chase anybody in this movie. Like,
being chased.
He's not menacing at all.
No.
And I kind of feel like if you give Chris Pratt can be a guy that could be overpowered, but at the same time, you might not know if you can handle him or not.
Now that we've seen what he's got, Guardians of the Galaxy. Who did you think I was going to? Joe Golev.
I thought you were going to go Joe Golev because his name's Joe.
Wait, do you have a director?
I don't know. I didn't pick a director for this.
I went with somebody who can do action and comedy well, as evidenced in Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but I went with Doug Liman.
Well, that's pretty good.
I think he could do this. He could pull this off.
I'm going to go with John Lasseter.
Whoa. Wow. Fucking Toy Story's John Lasseter.
I'm going to make this an animated film.
Anything would improve what we have
and you know
right
what?
Now.
It's not going to be people. It's going to be like planes. It's going to be a whole world. It's boats. It's boats this time.
I like that. Can we still set it in Dallas, though,
yes,
at least?
Can
we redeem Dallas?
No water. It's just boats.
Do we have lakes? We have one medium-sized lake.
This is going to be amazing. Let me tell you, I'm going to share one last thing about this movie.
Sure.
About why it breaks my heart so much that, like, there's this movie about... two people that fall in love named Joe and Sarah, and it made me feel so good in my heart when I started watching this DVD. And then when I see like how horrible this movie, when I'm reminded how horrible this movie is, I'm like, oh man, I kind of wish that we had something better for our namesake. Yeah, but I'm sorry, baby. We've got Serving Sarah is pretty much the closest we're gonna get.
You know, my last gripe about this movie, and I'll make this quick, is the title. Because this came right on the heels of like Chasing Amy and Judging Susan, or there was some TV show.
Judging Amy.
There went through. Was it called Judging Amy?
Judging Amy.
I swear.
Because Amy Brenneman played the character.
Oh, yeah, there you go. But like late 90s, there was like a string of TV shows and movies where it was like, you know.
Yeah. I gotcha.
Verb, noun.
Yeah.
And I'm tired of it.
Well, you know what? Good.
It's my proclamation at the end of this episode.
Excellent. What are we going to watch next week?
It's going to be a surprise.
Oh, okay. You don't have it worked out. That's fine. if you've got any thoughts about Serving Sarah or the porn parody called Servicing Sarah, which was what the original title of this movie was supposed to be, go ahead and let us know on our Facebook page. Just look it up on Facebook. Just look up the editing bay. You're going to find the girl with the bleeding eyes. That's us. Mm-hmm. And share your thoughts, what you thought about the movie, if you have any ideas for movies that you'd like us to see. Because Joel obviously needs some help.
No.
Oh, did you got something?
I realized I forgot. I do have one. Do you want me to spoil it now?
Please.
Wait for the end of the episode?
Just tell me now.
Okay.
You've stopped me, so we may as well.
Sorry.
No.
Well, we're in October now, or we're close to it. We're right on the heels. So we're technically in Halloween mode.
Uh-huh.
So it's time to start doing some scary movies, some horror movies. I want to do one that I've never seen, that I've specifically avoided, that people have told me not to see. We have never done an M. Night Shyamalan movie, and we're going to do the worst M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Which one?
As told, but you know, I don't know. It could be anything right about now, right?
There's so many bad ones.
Well, many people call this the beginning of the end. I'm talking about The Happening. The Happening. It's been nicknamed The Crappening. Joe, have you seen this movie before?
I've seen the Riff Tracks version.
Really?
Of it.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, well then, this is what we're doing then. We're going to do The Happening.
Okay.
We're going to see it. We're going to talk about the promise of M. Night Shyamalan with The Sixth Sense and his downfall in this movie.
All right.
Starring Mark Wahlberg.
Okay,
are you
cool.
Fine with that?
All right. No, I'm fine with that.
Joe's disappointed visibly.
No. That's totally cool. Why don't you tell the good people what they can find on our website?
Our website, you mean www, not the editing bay, not edit bay, editingbay.com. Well, you can go there, you can get all of our episodes. Although I say that every week, Jeff, I've noticed we're a couple episodes behind there, so maybe that's not the place to go for the episodes.
Hey, that's a classy way to call them out.
But it is the place to go. No, I'm sorry, I totally just did that. No, I'm just saying, we say it's on there.
Your microphones just go off.
Sorry, buddy. So don't go there maybe for the latest episodes, but do go there to show your support and buy a T-shirt. We still have the T-shirts from the live show that have the little mashup of the logo with the Masters of the Universe. We also have, I say we have pictures from the live show, but really it's just a picture.
We have one picture.
But I have several that I've yet to upload.
We should upload some.
I think I'm going to get off my ass and finally upload those.
You should do that.
So instead of one picture, you can look at three.
Look at a few.
From the live show.
Hey, we've got like a birthday thing. Well, it's not going to be a public thing.
Yeah.
But we've got a birthday thing coming up.
We do.
That you're hosting at your place.
We're going to celebrate the 30th anniversary of Ghostbusters. Woo! Have a little private screening, have some folks there, but we're also going to have some Editing Bay fans there, it sounds like.
We're gonna try to record some little messages, some birthday messages.
Yeah. So are we officially, we're officially past the birthday, right? By months now.
Yeah, just by a month. We're past
the
birthday.
Okay, not too bad.
But we're gonna do a little thing called, the Eddies.
The Eddies.
Where we just kind of like, you vote for your favorite moments, your favorite movies that we've talked about.
That's right. Yeah, we'll have a list of categories. We're going to let you, the listeners, vote on them on the Facebook page, probably is where we'll put that.
Yeah.
So look for that in the coming weeks.
Uh-huh.
You can participate and you can help us celebrate the first annual Eddies.
Woo!
We'll be recording that episode later in the year.
And remember, if you're grabbing these podcasts off of iTunes, especially, when you get over there and you download it or whatever, just go to like the iTunes Marketplace, look up Next Wave Radio, and you could find our podcast. You find all the other podcasts on the network, but give us a rate. Rate, review us, recommend us to your friends. That will help us grow the show. Okay, so until next week when we talk about some M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah.
What's happening? my name's Joe.
Mine's Joel.
And for Jeff, thank you so much, sir, for doing your thing.
Yes.
We are the Editing Bay. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks, guys. Running around.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.